Hello, my friends. Welcome back to Cloud Wars Live. The digital revolution is in full swing all around us. It is changing how we live, work, play, think, interact with each other. It has been a blast in many, many ways. One of the great chroniclers of all of these changes, these innovations, and I think an extraordinary new way of life is our dear friend, Chris Lockhead. He is a guy who's done podcasts, authors. He's been a best-selling author. He's done lots of different things. Mostly, he's a big thinker. And I love what when Christopher describes himself as friend to the different. Christopher, great to see you.
Thanks, Bob. Yeah, I like that description of friend to the different.
Yes.
Because it really, at least for me, sums the whole thing up.
Hey, can I ask you on that? Because you're incredible, important, deep focus on this thing about the significance of different. I saw a guy on LinkedIn, his profile in the back, he had a saying. It said, "Don't be different. Be the difference." Now, I don't know if he was sort of slicing that a little too thin there, but this notion of don't just try to do the same thing everybody else is doing a little bit better, a little bit cheaper. But your thing is, it's a big world out there. Let's go get it. So anyway, I just wondered, what's your thought about don't be different, be the difference?
So if there's multiple ways you could interpret that comment from the guy. So if what he's saying is what matters is making a difference, I couldn't agree more. And so if what he's saying is don't be different for the sake of being different, be different to make a difference. Okay. Yeah. But who cares? It's a fucking meme. Yeah. The real issue is there's sort of two dynamics on different at a minimum. One of them is the human personal one. And then one of them is the business one. And so the thing most people don't think much about is when you stand back and look at human relations, you look at our relationship of, I don't want to talk about it, but multiple decades.
A lot.
We connect on our similarities, on our shared interests. We love technology. We love the technology industry. We love the difference that technology can make in the world. We both understand that information technology is a great source of elevating humanity, is created massive, massive value and wealth for the United States of America. It's a big reason why today America is the strong country that she is, et cetera, et cetera. So we connect on that. We connect on many things. We share social and political ideas. We like to talk about sports. We like to share our family. So we have many, many, many things in common, long list. And that's great. And that's how we connect. And it's fun to talk about shared interests and shared ethos and the like. And all human beings want to be loved for what makes them them. And human beings, interestingly enough, I just looked this up. You and I and you, me, and everyone else that's a human shares 99.9% of our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
So we are 0.1 different. And it's that uniqueness that we want to be loved for what makes us special. So the truth is, I love you because we connect on all these great things, and you're not me. You have other interests. You have other ideas. You have differing ideas. You make me think. You make me laugh, et cetera, et cetera. And so the truth is we connect and to some degree value each other on our similarities. But what really connects us is our difference. Our different with an S, difference.
Yeah.
Now, if you go back to what this guy is saying, here's the secret of life. You ready? Here's the whole fucking secret. Can you figure out you're different? Some people call it being self-actualized, knowing yourself, understanding yourself, et cetera, et cetera. All the good self-help, professional development, personal growth, all that good stuff, all of it. And can you connect your uniqueness, your different, your 0.1% different, to creating value for others in a way that makes a difference? Mm-hmm. That's the secret to life. I'll give you a simple example. My father-in-law is in his 90s. He took over his father's farm that was founded in 1945. Today, that farm is the last working farm in San Jose, California. When they started farming there, the nearest home, and they're like in a suburb of San Jose, not far from downtown. Phil, Mr. Produce himself, the Yoda of all produce in California, certainly Northern California, will tell you when his father bought the property and built the house, the nearest home to that house that was not connected to a farm was 25 miles away. Okay, so what's going on right now in Phil's life? Well, what's going on in Phil's life right now is his daughters, primarily my wife, but there's two others and they help a lot too, and his grandson, Jason, took over the farm. And Jason has two children. They're little right now, but man, do they love coming to play at the farm. So Phil gets to hang out at the farm with his children, his grandchildren, and his great-grandchildren. And then people show up. It's a beloved thing. They don't treat us like a business. They treat us like a beloved John Muir State Park, like a mini Yosemite. And it's wonderful because the community understands exactly what's going on. Because if we cared about the money, we would have done what literally every other family did, which is sell the farm. So what's my point? My point is Phil Cosentino loves farming. He loves fruit trees. He loves fruit. He loves produce. He could tell you why this is a piece of shit fennel and why this is legendary fennel. And he could tell you why and how it was grown and da-da-da-da-da. So he loves everything about being a farmer, farming, fruit, trees, you name it. His nickname is Mr. Produce. He was on the radio here for like 30 years. That's what they called him, Mr. Produce. He did like the 30-second produce update. What's fresh today or what? I don't know. It's amazing. Anyway, so what's my point? My point is one of the things that makes him different is his love of farming and particularly fruit trees and produce. And he figured out a way to connect his different to his family, to really give his different to his family. And he has stood for his different and his father's different. We're now on the fifth generation. And you know what? The reason people come is because it's radically different. We're the last working farm in San Jose. And he, in his 90s, gets to sit there at the fruit stand on the weekend and he holds court. Because you want to come talk to Yoda. Maybe you got a question about your peach trees. Or maybe you want to hear him tell stories about 1945 and the real name of Silicon Valley, which is by John Muir, named by John Muir. John Muir named Silicon Valley the Valley of the Heart's Delight. Because he said everything and anything can grow here. And so what's my point? A primary source of joy in Phil Cosentino's life is his love, his joy, his uniqueness as that he learned from his father. He's given to his family such that his grandson and daughters have taken over and gives to the community. And he is beloved by all for it. That's called taking your different and making a difference. And in this case, earning a living. He's not a wealthy man economically. And yet he might be the most wealthy man I know.
Yeah.
That's what's my different and how do I harness my different to make a giant difference for others? And the degree to which we can do that in our lives, it's a primary driver of joy and happiness and love. And nobody ever talks about it. Because we live in a world that teaches us to be successful. The number one thing we have to do is fit in.
Well, Chris, it's a beautiful story. I'm so happy to hear that, you know, Phil's continuing to be up and about doing the stuff he does so well, holding court, loving his family, being with his great grandchildren and all. And before we hop over, Chris, to the, I know you had some interesting, fascinating data about freedom and, you know, what goes on there. Before I get to that, I just did want you to say a couple things too about Phil, since you've talked about him making a difference. Before he took over the farm too, I believe he served his country and, you know, fought valiantly, you know, for the rest of us.
Phil Costantino is a Marine who was drafted to serve our country in the Korean War. And he did. Once a Marine, always a Marine.
Yeah.
This is a man of extraordinary honor, of extraordinary fidelity and integrity. And he's a 90-year-old Italian dude. And 2 days ago, my wife was walking around the house and he's on speakerphone and he's going mental about how we're fucking up the grapes. To the point where she's like, you know that when you hold the phone out here and he's like, and she's like, she's got him on mute and she's looking at me and going, oh. And he's saying, listen, I know about these grapes and we should have done this last week and why aren't we doing this today? And da 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 da. And I just laugh at the whole thing. Perfect.
Wonderful.
What was it? There's a Sierra Nevada Brewing, I believe, is still independently owned, and they're one of the very early pioneers on the West Coast of what today we call the category of craft beer.
Oh, yeah.
And the founder, the father, is still the owner, and now the kids are involved. And if you pick up a can of Sierra Nevada, it says on the top of it, have we talked about this before?
I don't think so.
It says around the rim of the can, it says family owned and argued over for generations.
Well, that's the different thing, right? If everybody was saying the same thing, you know, who knows? They might have missed an improvement here or there.
Yeah, you want to have a spicy life? Join an Italian family who runs a farm together. Let's just see what happens.
Says the Scottish Canadian American. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Very proud Scottish Canadian American, I will have you know.
Absolutely.
And not that, of course, it's legendary to have been born in the United States. And there is something special about choosing a country and having that country choose you. And that's how it feels, by the way, when you sit there and the advisor or interviewer or officer or whatever the individual is that interviews you. So you pass all the tests and, you know, you understand the 16 branches of government and all of that, right? And the three or four different national anthems we have and the like. And the Statue of Limitations was, you know, brought here by aliens and all the good stuff, right? So you pass the test and then and they do the background check and all that sort of stuff. But then you got to sit down for an interview. And you go through the interview and the guy asks you this and asks you that. You never know what he's going to ask you. He might ask you what the capital of California is, because in my case, I was in California. And he might ask you your opinion about something. And it's a whole bunch of things that they might ask you. And at the end, he says, well, Christopher, I'm going to recommend you for citizenship. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, thank you. Thank you, Steve. And what's the likelihood that happens? And he said, well, I've been doing this for 15 years and I personally have never had a recommendation get denied. So, and then he looks at me and he says, thank you for coming here. Please be a great citizen and contribute. And thank you for coming here and, you know, go forth and multiply.
Yeah.
It's a very powerful thing. The other interesting thing that's powerful, you choose your country and you choose your name. They ask you what name you'd like to be, because, of course, there are many people who come from countries and for one reason or another, they decide to change their name in America. You know, if you look at people from certain parts of Asia, for example, I'll never forget. This is a side story, but we hired a bunch of folks back in the day when I was a CMO in China. And so we had a Chinese team and we had a Chinese marketing team. And one of the guys that are head of Chinese marketing, China Marketing, hired. His name was, you ready? Vader. Because I guess in certain parts of the country, folks are encouraged to select a English name, a more American name, a more Western name when they're fairly young. And so this kid was a fan of Star Wars, so he thought his first name should be Vader. And so his name was Vader, whatever his last name was.
Vader Lynn.
Yeah, well, that's what you get when you let an 8-year-old boy choose his new name. Anyway, so I could have been Vader Lockhead, or I could have been whatever. Anyway, I decided to choose the name I was given because I think it was fine and it seemed to be working all right. But the more powerful thing is to sit there and have somebody welcome you. And then the second powerful thing, of course, is at your ceremony.
Yeah.
And in my case, and I think we've talked about this a little bit, it was in Sacramento and it was in this beautiful old government building. And it seemed
pop in here. Because, yeah, we have. And it's an extraordinary story. I was going to ask you to just expand on that a little, because I think at the time you had, in the few years leading up to this, it was an incredible run up at the company where you were. You had been, I don't know, you traveled around the world monthly, quarterly. You had met leaders of industry, governments, you know, everywhere in the world. You had seen and done a lot of things. You're, I think, naturally somebody who's curious, you know, outgoing, wants to see things, experience things. You had seen and smelled and touched a lot of the world. But when you described that, walking into the state capitol building in Sacramento for the ceremony, I've always been struck by, you know, you were blown away. You expected it to be fantastic, but it's hard for you sometimes to talk about it because it was so moving for you. And I just think that's extraordinary.
Yeah, I think every American should go to one. I think every American should go through the process of becoming an American, because at least for me, and it was just my own experience, but it was obvious that it was like virtually everybody's experience on the day that I was there. What I was ill prepared for was how emotional it would be for me. And what I was also ill prepared for, which is really the data I wanted to get to, is, listen, I came from a great country. Canada is a great country, despite its insanity leanings of late. And Canada is one of the freest countries in the world. And it's a wonderful place. And I had a wonderful childhood and upbringing there. And just like country singers go to Nashville and actors go to Hollywood, if you want to play in the big leagues of tech, not that you have to, but at that time particularly, this was long pre-Zoom, being in Silicon Valley made a giant difference. And it made all the difference in my life. There's no way I could have had this life in Canada, certainly at that time. And being in that room and seeing people from Ethiopia and seeing people from Spain and seeing people from Venezuela and from all parts of Asia that you could, like, literally everywhere. And, you know, many of them dressed up in amazing, you know, amazing, amazing outfits. And they were running from something. I was running to something. And running from something is very different than running to something. And there were obviously people there running to something. But especially for the people running from something, it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
It's overwhelming because the opportunity we have here is incredible.
Yeah.
Queer people don't get thrown off the top of buildings in this country. And if by God forbid, somebody does something horrible to somebody in this country, there is still a consequence. Mm-hmm. There should be more of a consequence, but there's a real consequence. Yeah. In this country, nobody's going to stop you. You want to start a podcast? You want to be a creator? You want to be an entrepreneur? You want to learn to be a whatever it is you want to go do? There's nobody stopping you. And yes, we have our problems. This is not a perfect country by far. And we must continuously strive for a more perfect union. And America has her problems. But most of us are very confused, which brings me to the data. And I dug this up recently. So just how lucky are Americans? Well, it turns out, according to The Economist, they track democracies and freedom around the world. And they have multiple tiers of classification. They have, and I'll be slightly off, but I'll be directionally right. There's what they call a full democracy. And then there's what they call a, you know, a partial or semi-broken or fucked up democracy. And then there's, you know, some kind of a regime. And then there's like a horrible repressive. So I think there's four or five designations, but full democracy is the top. Well, you ready? What percentage of human beings on planet Earth live in a full democracy?
I hope it's 10.
I did too. It's 6.4. So let's just think about that for a second. If you live in the Western world, if you live in Israel, any democracy, any full democracy, you are already, before you do anything, when you wake up in the morning, wherever the fuck it is you wake up, however you wake up, if you wake up in a full democracy, you are amongst the luckiest 6.4% of human beings on the planet today, and I would argue, ever. Now, here's another interesting data point. We all think of the United States of America as being a big, strong country and most powerful country in the world, et cetera, et cetera. And there's roughly, what, 340, 350 million of us, somewhere in that range, Bob?
Yeah.
Guess what percentage of the entire population of the world lives in the U.S.?
5?
Yeah, 4.23. And so here's the aha. We're the luckiest fucking people who ever lived. Ever.
Yes, indeed.
On whatever dimension you want to talk about. Whatever dimension. You want to talk about health. You want to talk about freedom. You want to talk about opportunity. You want to talk about equality. Whatever you want to talk about. We are the luckiest fucking people in the world. And the United States of America is a new category of country. Mm-hmm. It is a radical experiment in self-governance, right? And so particularly now in an election season, we are going to continuously bombarded by idiots on both fucking sides. I say, oh, the other side wants to kill America. Oh, the other side wants to destroy America. Oh, we need to... And what they do when they do that, Bob, is they break the most important code that we could possibly have, which is don't destroy the category. We are a new category of country. And all this, the other side wants to destroy America bullshit, puts us against each other.
Yeah.
When in point of fact, we're amongst the 6.4 most lucky people in the world, or 4.3, depending on how you want to look at it. The other thing that I think is important, given the horrible war in Europe and Ukraine, and given the horrible actions of Hamas, whose stated intention is to kill everybody who celebrates on Saturday and then everybody who celebrates on Sunday, their words. Their words. They've said, we want to do it October 7th and an 8th and a 9th. We're going to do it until we have killed all Jews and all Christians. Those are their words. So further to this discussion is fascinating data from the Human Freedom Index. And the bottom line, without going through all the data detail, but it's clear in this chart that there is, and this is obvious to some of us, but not many. There is a direct correlation between democracy and freedom. There's a direct correlation. It says it. Global data as presented in the Human Freedom Index show a strong correlation of between democracy and human freedom, both personal and economic. This means that we typically can expect a country to be more free as it moves towards democracy. Mm-hmm. And we are the luckiest people that ever lived. And if you tune into social media or legacy dying media or listen to the vast majority of our political officials, you would think that we live in the most horrible place in the world where we all hate each other and the whole thing's a disaster. We got our heads on wrong, Bob.
Yeah. You know, Chris, one thing I wanted to say about that of, you know, there's many wonderful countries around the world, but, you know, just this thing about the United States, the new categories you described, it radically different. One of the genres of books that I really enjoy reading are novels about espionage novels, something like that, but things leading up to World War II and then in World War II. There's a number of authors who have said that, you know, as the U.S. entering World War II started its intelligence service back then, they wanted to get spies. We got to get, you know what's going on the ground. They were working with a lot of our allied countries in Europe. And one of the things that these people in Europe who were pretty good at having, you know, for hundreds or thousands of years had to have spies and things like that, they said, you Americans are the worst spies in the world because you don't know how to be, you know, put your head down and bow and scrape and this and that. He said, you could get picked out over here in Europe, you know, in a second because you think you're as good as anybody else and you got to sort of know your place. So anybody who wanted to do this had to go through this training, not about how to write an invisible ink and crap like that, but they had to know how to, you know, put your head down. Don't think that you're equal. Be subservient. Know your place. Stay out of the way. I just
hard
think
for us to do.
Fascinating. That doesn't just arise, you know, out of nowhere. So your point about the whole thing with the new category and the radically different, the contract, democracy, freedom.
Yeah. Look at what we've achieved. And imagine if we stop trying to tear each other down.
Yeah.
See, there's a very simple thing about humanity. When we fight over scarcity, we kill each other. When we collaborate on abundance, we thrive. We can do anything. We can go to Mars. We can invent iPhones and massive breakthroughs in medical procedures. When human beings collaborate, it is breathtaking what happens. When human beings compete, it's horrifying what happens.
Yeah.
Speaking of novels you might like, my brother from another mother, co-author of Play Bigger himself, the legendary Kevin Maney, just released his first novel.
Ah.
And he's written, I mean, many, many number one bestsellers that are business books. And he's one of the smartest guys I know. You should probably actually have him on. His brain is mind-bogglingly awesome. Anyway, he just released his first novel. It turns out when he was a USA Today reporter for maybe two decades, but long time. And shortly after the fall of the Berlin Wall, he was sent over there to cover what was going on. He was actually there for the opening of the first ever McDonald's in Moscow. And he was a young reporter and he was having all these experiences of being in this strange land when it was going through this massive transition. And Mikhail Gorbachev had, you know, torn down the wall and was moving Russia in a whole new, freer, more open direction. Anyway, it turns out Kevin chronicled all of it when he was a young man and at the time turned it into a novel and shelved it and sort of forgot about it. And I think it was his daughter. But anyway, either he dug it up or somebody dug it up. And I know for sure he gave it to his daughter and said, you know, just read this. And she said, Dad, it's really good. And so he took the manuscript and he, you know, updated it. And a guy with his experience now compared to where he was back then, his skills today and da-da-da-da. So he did some things to it. But it's essentially the same story. And it's an incredible read. His business books read like novels. So for him to write a novel makes a lot of sense. And this one, while a novel, it's called Red Bottom Line, is steeped in historical fact about that time. And the interesting thing in it, or one of the many interesting things in it, the reason he stopped going to Russia was one of his colleagues had the shit beat out of him and almost died, had to get airlifted, I think he said, to Poland. We have a podcast coming out very soon that we get into all this stuff. And the thing about the novel and Kevin's radically unique experience and now perspective is he was there when a new Russia was dawning.
Uh-huh.
And there was all this hope and optimism. He was living in the possibility that Russia could be, and it was very exciting. And then it got very terrifying. And, you know, we have a Wall Street Journal, Evan, blanking on his last name, who's been in captivity in Russia for an unbearable amount of time right now. Well, that could have been Kevin, or Kevin could have been dead. His colleague could have been dead. And so it's his, the thing that's extra cool about the novel, particularly at this time in history, is it brings you back to that time, and you can't help but mourn the loss of what could have been.
Yes. Yes. Didn't have to be this way.
Didn't have to be this way. And if Russia was a true democracy and could have stayed on the Mikhail Gorbachev path, that small percentage might have gone from 6.5 or 6.4 to 10.
Yeah.
And imagine what could have been possible. Russia could be the United States' biggest partner. Look, Germany today is equal to, or in some cases greater, a partner to Israel than even America.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you told my grandfather, who served in World War II, that was going to happen, right? We could have that relationship with Russia. We'd love to build software and technology there and welcome their people. And the Russians who've come here and lived here, who've been massively, who contributed massively as entrepreneurs and in other domains that, you know, I don't know as well. I know many, many legendary American Russians who came here.
Yes.
And we could have facilitated that.
Yeah. But yeah.
Not so much. Anyway, check it out if you're into that stuff. It's Red Bottom Line by the legendary Kevin Maney.
That would be great, Chris. It's so interesting. You know, I would say I was just puzzled when he said this, but I think it speaks to just maybe how busy Kevin was in his business book writing. But, you know, writing a novel and then forgetting it, or sort of leaving it, I mean, that's a different sort of thing there.
Especially one that's this good. I mean, this is as good as any that you could imagine. And because Kevin has 40 years as a reporter and a writer, and obviously a thinker, writing makes you a materially improved thinker. And of course, he has an incredible eye for detail. And so Russia, you can almost smell Moscow in the book, if you know what I mean. It's like got that incredible level of detail that brings it to life. And it's not invented detail.
Yeah.
So the stuff that's invented is a fun story that's a thriller kind of a thing. And yet it's steeped in a factual reality of a young Kevin Maney visiting Moscow at this incredible time. And he went multiple times over there. And then this horrible thing happened. He said, I'm not going back. And he hasn't been back.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry he is, but probably a good decision on his part.
Chris, yes.
We just have a couple minutes left. And I know there were some bigger, meatier items you wanted to get into. Can we, can I talk to the team and see if we can book a little more time here coming up?
I would love to. I have two entrepreneurs I've met of late who are not tech entrepreneurs who are doing things that are amazing.
Uh-huh.
I'll just tease you with who they are.
Yes.
The first one is a gal named Shantae Frazier. She's an MBA from one of the Ding Dong schools. She served our country honorably in our military. So she's what my friend Iron Mike Stedman, which is how I met her, calls a BVE, a Black Veteran Entrepreneur.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you, there are very few things that make me as happy as Black Veteran Entrepreneurs, but you know how I love vets and you know how I love entrepreneurs. Anyway, this woman is absolutely extraordinary. And she started a company called Well Capped. And it's Rent the Runway for wigs and weaves. And the aha is wigs and weaves began to be popular many years ago in many communities, but a lot in certain pockets of the Black community, and it began to grow and grow. And it's now moving into the mainstream, and, you know, the worst people in the world, the Kardashians, are sharing about it, and da 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 da. And now it's becoming a more broad fashion accessory. Right. However, the quality ones are very expensive. And so she's got a subscription service called Wellcapped. And she's getting traction right now. And it's absolutely amazing. Her name is Shantae Frazier. The company's called Wellcapped. The second one, and I'm going to have her on the podcast soon. Right. We have this one sitting in the can with the second one. His name is Sean Riley. And Sean is one of the three or four founders of Dude Wipes.
Uh-oh.
Dude Wipes is in the top five most successful companies ever to be on Shark Tank. Mark Cuban invested. Sean and a couple of his buddies kind of went through college together, drinking buddies, hanging out. And by the way, he looks exactly like the CEO of Dude Wipes should look. He's a duty dude from Chicago, and he's got the hair and the stat. He looks like a dude from Chicago. Anyway, they're all sitting around, drinking beer, watching sports, hanging out, living together. And somewhere along in the conversation, one of them goes, "We're dudes. We like wipes. Dudes have nasty butts. Why aren't there any wipes for dudes?" And like most conversations with dudes drinking beer, watching football or whatever, that, you know, it's like, "Feed mayonnaise to tuna fish. Genius." Right. But it never goes anywhere. Well, these guys made it go somewhere. And I'll tease you with this. Last year, Dude Wipes wiped 2.4 billion dudes' butts. They did approximately $150 million in revenue. And I think, if I'm remembering right, I might be off a little bit, but I'll be directionally right. I think they have 30 or 40 people. And they're one of the top five most successful companies in Shark Tank history. So anyway, as much as I love tech entrepreneurs, and you know I do, I love it when smart, driven, creative, innovative people say, you know what, how come I can't have a subscription service for wigs? Or, dudes have nasty butts. We need to clean this shit up. Ta-da, Dude Wipes. And both of them have designed radically new categories and are having insane success. Shantae's a little bit earlier on, of course, and Sean and the boys are really doing it. But anyway, I'd like to get into a little bit about some of the learnings, yes, because I think when we go outside of tech and look for tech-enabled companies that are ideas that any of us could have had,
right,
but didn't, or maybe did have and did nothing with, and then you meet an entrepreneur that has what is a both non-obvious but an immediately obvious idea, you go, wow, isn't it? You don't have to go to Stanford and be able to write an algorithm and create a LLM to be able to be a legendary entrepreneur.
No. And Chris, we'll love to get into that in more detail. Those sound incredible, and the people behind them, how they did it, and your perspectives on it are great. But the point you've made here at the end a couple times about how obvious that term is, well, yeah, that's obvious. Yeah, it's obvious after somebody else does it.
Yeah.
And nobody knew about it. So yeah,
Amazon.com, not obvious at the time, I could tell you.
No, not at all.
Salesforce, not obvious. The number of people said it wouldn't work. I listened to a Barry Weiss podcast a while ago with Rick Rubin, one of the greatest music producers of the modern era. And he founded Def Jam Records with Russell Simmons in his college dorm. And he tells a story about how when they started, the entire world hated hip hop. The stuff that was said about that music is unbelievable. And that was, what, 30, maybe 40 years ago now? It's the number one category of music in the United States of America. Go
well, that's
yourself.
Obvious. That's obvious, yeah.
Well, sure, that was obvious, right?
Sure. Well, Professor, this
all
is
right, Bob.
Fascinating. Thanks for sharing some wonderful stuff about, you know, the past and good things. We got some other fun things lined up. Christopher, always a pleasure. Say
thank
hi
you, brother,
when you see him.
God bless you.
All right, you too, sir. And folks, thanks to you for being with us. Christopher Lockhead, we're going to have him back even sooner than usual. We'll get into those great new entrepreneurs he's talking about. Happy spring, everybody. Have a blast.